This special edition of Midori House was first broadcast on the 14th of October 2015 on Monocle 24.
And welcome to a special edition of Midori House, coming to you live from the fourth edition of Frieze Masters in London's Regent's Park. I'm Robert Bounds. On today's show, we'll get the collector's take on the fair with Patrizia Sandretto. We'll be propping up the bar with James Brett, founder of the Museum of Everything, and we'll head to the Listen Galleries booth to find out about Carmen Herrera, probably one of the few living artists on show at Masters at the admirable age of 100. Plus, I'll learn about Iris Clare with Daniela Luxemburg at Diana and Luxembourg's booth, which is dedicated and devoted to the intrepid and eccentric gallerist.
Iris Clare was a Greek woman who married a Frenchman, opened her gallery in 1956, and basically created all the modern movement, the marketing of the modern movement in Paris.
That's all coming up in the next half hour here on a special edition of Midori House, broadcasting, beaming to you from Frieze Masters in London's Regent's Park. Okay, and welcome to the programme. This is me, Robert Bounds. As previously discussed, we're live from Frieze Masters in a fine and autumnal Regent's Park in North London. I'm sitting around me and I'm surrounded by wonder, antiquity, beauty and 50 Shades of Grey. I'm not talking about people's sex lives. I'm talking about the colour scheme of the none more sombre but beautiful Frieze Masters. Now, this is a live show. You can probably hear some of the hubbub. It's a little bit more hushed here at Frieze Masters than it is at Frieze London. Some of the hubbub around me. So we are live. So what happens when you do a live show is some of your guests go walkabout. They go into the outback, the art outback. So what we're going to do first is we're going to play a pre-recorded item. This is me talking to Daniela Luxemburg of Diane and Luxemburg Gallery. She's got a fantastic booth here at Frieze Masters, which is an homage to the French-Greek art dealer Iris Clare. I'll leave it to Daniela to talk herself around her own booth. Or is it?
Iris Clare was a Greek woman who married a Frenchman, opened her gallery in 1956 in a small 12 square meters near the École des Beaux-Arts in Rue des Beaux-Arts, and found Yves Klein and Jean Tanguy and Armand, and basically created all the modern movement, the marketing of the modern movement in Paris.
And it's a kind of, it's a handsome stuff. There's a lot of, in terms of the work, there's a lot of tactile things. There's a lot of things that move. There's a lot of things that you might want to get close enough to brush against, but you probably wouldn't recommend it. Maybe we can walk over here and have a look at one of the Armand piece, yes. Which is a fantastic piece of kind of Francophile, I don't know, what is it? It's maybe une poubelle?
Piles of rubbish. Basically, she was a genius. Her first exhibition, she commissioned Yves Klein to do an exhibition which was called Vide, Empty. And she asked him to paint the walls in blue. And then, after a few weeks, she put it down and she commissioned Armand to make an exhibition which is called Plein, Full. And that's part of that exhibition. But they were piles of rubbish in 1956 in 12 square meters of a gallery. And for the opening of the exhibition, Armand took a boîte de sardines, you know, box of sardines, which is full.
Sounds so much better when you say it.
And full up. And that was the invitation to the opening of Plein. Genius marketing.
That is genius. Sometimes we get some kind of fairly luxurious and what we think are witty invitations through the post. Yeah. Luckily, most weeks. But that is the best I've ever seen.
The last one, which exists, it's Corisse Armand, the widow of Armand, who gave it to us.
It's a funny job to curate a show that's already kind of been curated, or is certainly an homage to somebody else. So how do you pick? It's kind of the $64 million question at an art fair, but how do you pick what goes on the walls, especially when you have to kind of chime with someone from history, with a bit of a heroine of yours?
Well, I think once you start doing a sort of research and you follow the quality of work, because we don't do research for publishing a book. We are hunters of works of art. So we do it in order to find great works. Once you start doing it, a work leads to the other. Like through the plan, we found the Yves Klein from 1956 that was probably exchanged by Yves Klein and Armand. Through that, we found Takis, her best friend, who was the guide of the gallery. And we just went on. And then they were American artists. You see here, we brought the documents of the time. First of all, she did a newspaper, Iris Time. The whole idea to put her picture with a picture of the artist and write all sorts of things in order to bring people. Obviously, nobody that she wanted to bring, they didn't come because the bourgeoisie was not interested in buying contemporary stuff. They were buying, you know, tableau salle à manger, nice decorative things, or older things. Bill Copley, for example, the American artist, she not only showed his most erotic the show.
Sexy suffragettes.
Yes. She also was painted from the back by him in that painting at the back of ours, which I'll show you, which goes later to the exhibition at the Musée de Menil. And totally politically incorrect, the title is Violated Viola.
And looking kind of like she means business here. Presumably the moral of the story is to never French kiss the fiddler.
Of course. And look at what is in the painting. There is another erotic painting that decorates that salon. And all that was in order to do something, to invent. I guess that all this contemporary movement of the 50s in France was to invent a new language after the war. It's inconceivable to think that the war, the Second World War, didn't leave huge emotional traces on all the creative movements. So I think she was like the answer of after the war. Let's do something which is different. Let's have conceptual art, erotic art, different way of exhibiting, different way, the fact that she was a woman and she carried herself, her art, and she was putting it at the same time, as you see from the picture. She was sexy. She was always wearing great clothes. We commissioned somebody, very famous art historian, Robert Pincus Witten, to write about her because he used to work for her when he did the called the Bazaar, and he said that she would come around 11 to the gallery on high heels, fur coat, chic. She would sit and ask her astrologer. In the first phone conversation was to her astrologer to ask how is it going. And then in these newspapers of hers, there is always a place for the astrologer that obviously tells something that will come, and never did. She died penniless.
There's a pack of cards in there somewhere. There's a moral to this story, but maybe the moral is just to dress for the occasion. The high heels, the fur coat, and certainly turning up at 11. They're all things that certainly we can recommend that to the world, can't we, Daniela?
I think so, absolutely. I always say that there is no paintings which is sold before 10 o'clock. I never come before 10.
Daniela, thank you so much for talking through your booth that you're really borrowing from Iris Claire. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a nice way to start the show, actually. Daniela Luxemburg moonlighting as Iris Claire, or the other way around. Isn't she great at talking about the paintings on the walls of her booth? So that was how we kicked off our Frieze Master show. Now I'm joined live before me by Oscar Humphreys, formerly the editor of Apollo and now the sales director at Stephen Friedman Gallery. Oscar, welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you very much for hot-footing it from your booth to ours. I call it a booth. It's not really a booth, is it?
It's a booth, a stand.
It's all right.
It all works.
We're somewhere. Now, I wanted to talk to you before we switched on the microphones. We started talking about the kind of two different speeds of the fair. So we were at Frieze London yesterday, the contemporary fair. Now we're amongst the sort of antiquity, wonder, and kind of emollients of Frieze Masters. If one is a little bit of an amusing art fair, what are the two speeds for you?
I think if they're kind of siblings, this is the older brother, really, even though it's, as we know, the younger fair.
Yeah.
This is, I think, the third year of Frieze Masters, and I think it's really sort of come into its own. When a new fair emerges, there's a sort of, what do collectors want from a new fair, and then what can the fair provide visitors and collectors that they didn't have before. And I think, you know, we go to Frieze and we love Frieze for the zeitgeist and for what's happening now. And I think Frieze Masters is really interesting because, you know, we can come here and look back. You know, the criteria, you know, the work here was made before the year 2000. And what's really exciting is to visit both fairs in either order. And, you know, at Frieze, which is literally lighter, it's rather dark in here today, right. You know, you've got, you know, the very cutting edge, and you have, you know, all that excitement and the kind of viscerally contemporary, and you come here to contemplate.
This is a bit like the morning after, actually, isn't it? But in a very good way. This is kind of like going to a church to kind of absolve yourself of whatever happened at Frieze Contemporary.
Absolutely, the grubbiness of you know, of hype and speculation.
I feel like there should be a font for sale. There's that kind of stuff. So tell us about what's happening at the Stephen Friedman Gallery. You're exhibiting at both fairs.
We are, and this isn't the BBC, so I'll plug shamelessly.
Absolutely.
At Frieze, of course, we've got the big...
We'll be your red sticker, baby.
Yeah, thank you. We've got Tom Friedman's Cocktail Party, which is a kind of Instagram sensation.
Yeah.
And a really exciting work of kind of 26 life-size figures, which I think, you know, along with Glenn Brown's stand at Gagosian, I think it's there seems to be an enormous amount of excitement around that piece. And then here we have Melvin Edwards, a senior African-American artist, and he had it was the first show that Whitney gave a black sculptor in 1970, and in the show with these amazing sort of geometric barbed wire pieces, and we have one of these pieces here shown for the first time and planned and drawn in 1970 and then brought to London here in 2015, and I think that's what galleries here do. You know, they in a world in which, you know, these works are fast receding into private collections and palaces in the Gulf and museums, you know, and there's a scarcity of great material. What's wonderful about this fair is people, they put on their jewels and their best out, you know, and they find material and they bring it here. And there's,
you're right. That's something nice about this fair, right? People. It's like dressing to travel. People dress up and they come here. Last night's party was pretty wild.
It was a Gucci
fun
party. Yeah. It was great.
But people, everyone here looks good, and they've made it's a different kind of speed.
They do, and it's, you know, people. You know, if you bring a material, you know, you find a receptive audience. You know, if you put on a great exhibition with thought and behind it, you know, a sophisticated audience responds really well. And, you know, obviously it's great here to meet serious collectors and museum people, but we do. But of course, you know, the great thing about Frieze and Frieze Masters is that they're democratic. And, you know, and I guess we'll be spending our weekend talking to art students and a kind of broader audience.
And we talked, didn't we? When I came to visit you at the stand, we'd set up some kind of joke for the radio. And now I can't remember my feeder line.
The joke is... Well, we were talking about the jokiness, you know, the seriousness of Frieze Masters, and the, you know, and the kind of the jokiness of those other things over there. But, you know, the Frieze. But, you know, the punchline is the price. You know, I think people really see value now in historic art, given how expensive the bright young things are.
It's a strange thing. Without any of the history or the historiography, suddenly there's more zeros going on. There's more zeros going on down the road than there are.
But we need Frieze Masters. We need history, because, you know, if, you know, only by looking back do we know where we're going. So it's a necessary fair.
There's a beautiful and epigrammatical way to end our interview.
Thank you,
Oscar Humphries, formerly of Apollo, now sales director at Stephen Friedman Gallery. Thank you very much for talking us through some of your favourites, and for your own show here. We're going to be talking to Patrizia Sabreto de Rovedengo in 1 minute. But first, we have some promotional items.
Monocle has bureau around the world. In Tokyo, Hong Kong, Singapore, Istanbul, London, Toronto and New York City. In Singapore, our bureau chief is Nolan Giles.
I think the most exciting thing about being based here in Singapore during this period of such rapid growth for Southeast Asia is the energy of the professional community here. So you have this Singaporean mindset of ambition and of hard work and of punching well above its weight, mixed with a community of people from outside the country that have come here to add more depth, to bring their knowledge, to bring their culture and their understanding.
Hear from Monocle's editors and correspondents on the stories that matter and the places that matter every day on Monocle 24.
Okay, and we're live from Freeze Masters. We're abuzz with dealers, collectors, and the inquisitive. If you listen carefully, love a bit of radio silence, you might just hear the sound of hands being shaken and checks being signed. Joining me on the show now is someone who'll be keeping a keen eye on what galleries have to offer this year, the Italian art collector Patrizia Sandretto di Rebadengo. And welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for racing through the London traffic to be here.
Yes, from Freeze to Freeze Master.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's fantastic. There is so good energy.
They need... The best way of getting people from one fair to the other is a giant catapult. Yeah. What do you think?
Yes. No,
people would have to sort of change their mode of dress for that.
So I think that it's so great to... What happened in London in this week? I still remember when I started collecting many years ago, 25 years ago, London was not the same of today. Today it's so great to have the fair, to have all the gallery, to have all the museum. It's really something special that just happened in London and not in many other cities in the world.
Well, it's very nice of you to say so. I wonder what is the difference, do you think? Is it fairs like this that have become a focal point for museum curators, for collectors like yourself, for artists, for people like us that just want to rock up and talk about it? What's the focal point for you?
No, I think that what is happening in London and what is even this fair, I remember the first edition of this fair, what happened that all the city, all the art world understood in London how is important to create a network, a system, in order that everybody can, when come in London in this week, have the great opportunity to see exhibition, strong exhibition, because you see what there is at the Tate and what happened also now in the Serpentine and also in the Whitechapel and also the smaller museum.
And people shift their shows to coincide with this week or this month now, don't they?
Yes, and then also the gallery. On Monday evening, all the gallery open new show, and this is something that it's so important, no? Because also for curators, not only for collectors, obviously for us collectors it's a great occasion to see so many things, but I think that what is also interesting also for, because curators are so important, because it's true, they maybe they don't buy, but they are so important because they start to do dang exhibition with artists that they know here in their museum, in different spaces. And so there is the right way to work. And even I'm in the International Council of the Tate, and it's so great because our meeting is a meeting that for us is very important. It's once a year, happen on Monday of the week of the fair. And this is so, so interesting and so important that a museum... no profit, public museum, work together with a fair that obviously is a profit institution. And so to put together the two words, I think that is something very special, very unique. And I have to say the truth that I cannot think another city that happened the same thing in a week.
Do you think, what's the level of conversation here? A lot of people have said... We had Daniela Luxemburg, we started off the programme talking to her, and she sort of said, well, it's a different thing to New York, it's a different thing to Paris, it's a different thing to Turin, I guess.
Yes.
That people have a different sort of conversation here. There's money here, of course, as we know,
yeah.
And there's artists here, there's history here, but there's also maybe an easy way that people talk about stuff in London,
yeah.
And this is easy for me to say because I'm from here, but I need someone else to tell me that my hunch is correct or incorrect.
You are from London.
But what do you, is there something for you coming from Turin, is there a different what's the spice that makes the sauce so tasty for you?
Yes, I think that was is very different here, that is so international. When you come in London, you can see work of art, curator, collector for all over the world. This happened only in London. Now also Paris is trying to do something, and next week everybody's in Paris, but London is always the place in which everything wants to be here, and this makes a big difference, and this is the strength. And then obviously you have also in this week there are also the auction.
Yeah.
This is true. So it's are two different words, museum and auction, but at the end they have to live together, and it's so important. We cannot talk about museum without talking about auction.
No,
and so on. So, and this it's quite interesting, no? Because also this has changed a lot, because when I started, auction was not so important like are now. Now we're a part of the work, and they work together, and they are still together.
Now they've all got to pretend to be friends.
Yeah. And,
And we're push for time. I've got one last question for you, Patricia, actually, but it's a $64 million question, and that is... It's fantastic to be, you know, with a collector this afternoon here at the fair. So what on earth has caught your eye? How do you work a fair? I mean, do you go on a grid system? Do you have to go in disguise so that, you know, people don't know it's you? Do you have to be your own secret shopper? How on earth do you treat a fair like Frieze Masters and Frieze Contemporary?
Yes, so are two different fair, are two different moments when you come to Frieze. When you come here, you see masterpiece. When you go to the Frieze, you see different obviously young artists, different project. But what is for me very important to come in both the two fairs is that there is the opportunity to talk with important galleries, yeah, and to have also the opportunity to talk with artists. And then from this, I just came from Frieze, and I just talked with an artist that we are thinking to do an exhibition in Torino, in my garden, in the garden of the Fondazione in Torino, mm-hmm, and the project starts here. So it's not only to buy a work of art, it's the relation, the possibility to talk with artists, galleries, curators, that then from this point you can then have a project that can be an exhibition, that can be a collection, many things. So this is really what I like when I'm here, that because I can really find so many different people and so many good collector, curator, direct artists, and with them we can really work together and thinking for next project, not only for the collection but also for my foundation. And okay, so, and this for me is very important.
Nice. Well, we thought the word conversations was going to come up. It comes, yes, up a lot when we do these programs, and when, yes, we talk to people, they talk about conversations, curators, museums, collectors, artists, and dealers all getting together. Conversations, yes, seem to be what it's about. Luckily, yes, we're on the radio.
Yes, we converse in the radio.
Thank you very much indeed, yeah, for running practically across the park to come on our program. And we wanted to ask you about your checkbook, but you told us about your foundation. That was a good answer.
Yeah, it is. But you have to come once to something like that in Torino from my foundation.
We've shot it. We love it, but I'm looking forward to visiting it properly.
Come and all the people, auditors will come to Torino to visit my foundation too.
Did you hear that, everybody? It's an open invitation.
Yes, waiting for all of you.
Patrizia Sandretta di Rabadango, thank you very much. Indeed. After a short break, we're going to have a short break. No, we're not going to have a short break. We're going straight into the next item. Mille grazie.
Grazie.
And now we're heading to the Listen Galleries booth to learn about the work of Cuban-American artist Carmen Herrera, who might just be one of the youngest masters on show at the tender age of 100. Born in 1915, she's probably one of few artists being shown at Frieze Masters who's still alive, and her vivid work spans decades spent in New York, Cuba and Paris, all of which have influenced her transition through different styles of contemporary art. Producer Holly went to meet Sarah Berano, sales associate at Listen Gallery, to get a lesson in the work of Carmen Herrera.
This particular group of work spans from the 1948, is the earliest, to 1992. That's not all of her practice, but it spans six decades. Really, within that period of time, she is transitioning and covering a number of different periods and styles, from work in Havana in the 1930s and 40s, to Paris in the late 1940s and early 50s, and then in New York from the early 50s to the present day.
And is she still making work now?
She is, very much so, every day. So we have six paintings on the Frieze Masters booth, one to represent each decade from the 1940s to the 1990s inclusive. This first work here, Iberic, is from 1948. And the work next to it on the right is titled Green Garden, and it's from 1950. Both of these works were painted in Paris when Carmen lived there from 1949 to 1953. They're particularly important works because they sort of illustrate a transition in her work from what earlier was more of a sort of abstract expressionist style when she was in Cuba, and what later became sort of very formal geometric abstraction and sort of hard-edged minimalism, and works of the American abstract painters from the 1950s and 60s.
So do you have an example of that here today?
Yes, so this painting here, red with white triangle, is a diptych Carmen painted in 1961, the first diptych she made. So the first time she explored using multiple panels. This particular work is on canvas. So there are two canvases held very close together, which is a way that Carmen sort of explored a different dimension within the work. It sort of enhances its architectural sensibility. There's a real tension that you see when you see the work in the flesh that is really hard to capture and illustrate in the photography.
So now we've arrived at Carmen's drawings. Do you want to talk us through a few of these?
So we're showing five drawings dating from 1969 to 1988. They are all pencil and felt tip pen on paper, and drawing is a really essential part of Carmen's practice. It forms the basis and foundation for all her paintings and three-dimensional works. Carmen always begins with a small sketch, which is covered in annotations and mathematical marks. It's a very sort of rational, considered process of how she arranges the colour planes and, you know, geometry within the work.
Does the geometrics of the painting come before the colour for her?
The forms and the colour both happen together. The process is all about those sort of working simultaneously, and it's about the balance, the tension of the forms, the play between the foreground and the background, how the colours relate to one another, clash, work against each other and together. So really it all comes together at the same point.
What's the style of the paintings that Carmen's creating now?
I would say that in the early 1950s, when Carmen arrived in New York, where she's been ever since, she really sort of found her voice and language, and that is one of, you know, hard edges, straight lines. She was really a pioneer of geometric abstraction. So really all the work that we see from the early 1950s to the present day, she's speaking a similar language, but she's constantly reinventing herself. So the work that she's making now and last year and the year before feels completely contemporary and fresh, but is recognisable as her work and practice.
That was Holly speaking to Sarah Bejarano. I have on good authority. Now, from the Listen Gallery, talking about Carmen Herrera, now I have James Brett with me from the Gallery of Everything and the Museum of Everything, dressed like he's fresh from the links.
I am, Rob, I am. And very nice to invite me to a 30-minute interview. It's really a great pleasure.
I'm sorry, we ran out of time. We had to rearrange this. You have no idea how much we had to rearrange this thing. So we've got to talk very fast. Are you capable of talking very fast?
I can talk at great speed.
Okay, great
Robert
speed.
Bound.
So first of all, and also I should mention to our listeners that dressed fresh from the links golf course, with writing on the back of your hand like a stand-up comedian.
Yes.
Is this deals?
Well, look, yes, of course it's deals, Rob. This is about selling. An art fair is about selling. You know, You'd be surprised how many people come to the stand and go, this looks great. Is it for sale? Well, of course it's for sale. This is an art fair.
Yeah.
And
so someone's already bought your waistcoat.
You know, it's interesting. The things that go first are the furniture. They look at all the art, then they ask where you got it framed, then they ask if the furniture's available, then they want to come over for tea and coffee with mum. So it's quite, it's not a straightforward experience selling, I have to say.
And tell us what you are selling, because it's a beautiful booth, but the artwork is absolutely fantastic. You might have saved the nicest piece behind the curtain there.
We did. We're showing two artists, Martin Ramirez and Carl Redler, who are both people who made art privately in hospitals on different sides of the world at different times. And the piece was built around the Ramirez, which was only seen at the Reina Sofia before, which is a big museum in Spain. It's 6 meters long, and we built the whole stand around that piece,
right.
But we didn't want to give it away, so we've snuck it in the back where the Bar of Everything is serving free drinks all day long. Happy hour starts 11 o'clock. And I did that basically because I just, you know, doing an art fair is a little, it's hard work, as you know, Rob. So, you know, to take the weight off your feet, you need a bit of a lift with cooking.
I've had a little bit of your horseradish vodka. Are you making that in the back or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It tasted like it was. No, yes. It tastes actually delicious.
I don't know if it's a good idea. I have to say, I picked it up off an auction in the southern states of America where they used to lubricate the clients in order to get higher bids. I can't say it's helped the sales go along, but it has kept life a bit jollier.
But people, I mean, you realise that your drinks tokens now are kind of contraband. They're like kind of, you know, if this were a prison, let's imagine Friesmasters was a prison, these would be the highest currency, your drinks tokens.
Absolutely.
I see people kind of whispering and passing it like drugs in a nightclub.
The thing is, Friesmasters is quite a nice hangout, but I can't say it's the youngest crowd. So, you know, you want to give it a bit of a pep. and that's what we do. But I mean, really, we're trying to communicate these artists. We're trying to say that they're serious, that they should be taken seriously, collected. And then while we're doing that, we could consort.
And just finally, James, the work you've got on the stand, as I say, it's one of the most beautiful collections of work in the whole of the fair here. Are you looking, obviously it's good to sell, but are you, presumably you're looking to have conversations with curators and stuff? This is work that is being acknowledged, but maybe needs a little bit more acknowledgement. It needs to hang on museum walls, not just private homes.
That's absolutely right. And I set up the gallery in order to place work in museums if I could, big collections, and I rely on you to help me, Rob.
Well, that's the power of that's the power of these live broadcasts. James, thank you very much for taking the time. I'm sorry for the rearranged schedule, but it'll sound good, I promise you.
It's always a pleasure.
Especially on the podcast. That's all we have time for on this edition of Midori House. I do have time to thank our team, which was producer Holly Fisher, studio manager Bill Luty, and back in studio Chris Chilvers. For the time being, from me, from Robert Bound, we should thank Melcon as well. Cheers, Mel. Thanks for getting the wine. We should thank all the people behind the glass, in front of the glass, all the people that came. And thanks for Freeze for having us. I've been Robert Bounds, and thank you very much for tuning in.